From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Well, my next guest, I started doing some research, and what came to mind was how much we love relationships that are sort of not doomed, but maybe under tons of weird, strange pressure in the limelight. Sid and Nancy come to mind, or Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love. And her relationship with her husband has nothing to sort of do with them, except for the sort of Spy Who Loved Me, it could be a movie type scenario. It's an interesting story. Tom Arnold, her friend, calls her and her husband George incompetent spies in an unlikely love story. Her name is Simona Papadopoulos. She's an actress with a background in law. Fresh after graduating in law, she worked 7 years in human rights and child protection policies at the European Parliament in Brussels. Besides her legal background, she has always cultivated her passion for arts, in particular acting and fashion. She created her own fashion line called Agape by Simona, and she graduated at the New York Film Academy acting for film program. She's featured in various productions and political documentaries, including Ukraine 30 Years, directed by Igor Lapatonuk. She's here now. Simona, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. Very well, and thanks for this introduction.
Okay. I was nervous about the... I didn't know how I was going to frame it, because I knew I was on thin ice if I brought up Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love and Sid and Nancy, but it's a... You guys have a relationship that's sort of made for the movies, right?
Actually, it is. And we had many Hollywood production at different times interested into making a movie out of it. And we're just, in the process of assessing which is the best, the one that's going to portray this complicated story in the best way. But I agree with you, as a lot of cinematic, sometimes life is more creative than fiction. And definitely, I start to see my life as a movie since I entered into this adventure with George. And it was a wild, crazy journey, but incredibly intense and worthy. Also for the other aspect of it, which has been to take part in a process of exposing truth in a very complicated time in American history, where facts were portrayed in a very different way than the way they are. So here we are in Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, and Hollywood, in the cross over from Hollywood and politics, and that made of us characters sometimes, but starting from being players and keep being players of our own story, and the story of that many Americans know by now. So I always feel very emotional when I talk about it. And it's
why emotional? It's awesome.
It's amazing, emotional in a positive way.
I got it.
We survived a lot of pressure, and we really created a wonderful, not only personal story out of it, but there is George wrote a book about this entire saga, this entire story, from his political involvement with President Trump. And also there is a chapter that describes this, how I came into his life and how I became, and public perception, manipulated by, of course, the deep state and some political oriented media outlets to be this Russian spy, the spy who loved me, right?
You fit the part, though. I know you're Italian, but you fit the part. You could, like, for us Americans, like, I'm from Ohio, you might as well be a Russian spy. Like, there's like, I get why you get cast that way. Yeah, and I don't mean any offense by that, but
no. Actually, it's I always said that this makes me more mysterious and interesting than actually
yeah.
I am.
So it's a compliment.
Yeah, it's I think it is a compliment, and I'm actually I smile about it. And but our life became really an incredible story. That it's a spy story, but it's also a story that every American can relate to, how you become target of a weaponized institution that are, you're caught into this madness. And we were actually relatively young, and we learned you know, while living these facts, what we were going through, you know, all the other Trump advisors were people like in their late 60s, you know, where actually they were probably looking at their career behind. We got into the fire right in the prime time, you know what I mean? So it was just like a crazy opportunity to break through, telling our story. And at the same time, you know, love gave you strength. You know, when you go through fire together, you have a support system that it's very strong. It's very strong to defeat.
Well, yeah, and George's book is called Deep State Target. And when did he put that out? Is that recent?
No, this, I think it came out around 2019.
Okay.
But it became very actual today because everything has been saying in this book now has been corroborated by the last investigations, you know, that the last one where we finally find out that the Obama CIA was instructed to target 26 people in the Trump entourage for illegal espionage. So basically, whoever has already read the George book already knew this conclusion that investigators came to years later, totally debunking this Russia hoax, this fantasy. But there's still something surviving, even those who don't think anymore that I'm a spy, they still think I'm Russian. So it's I still have them in the process to set the record straight about who I am years later.
And I heard you guys live, I guess I read that Washington Post interview, which read like a Rolling Stone piece. It was really good. And Tom Arnold factors into it, which is funny. The fact that you guys live in Hollywood or under the Hollywood sign in Beechwood Canyon. I used to live in Beechwood Canyon. I know Beechwood Canyon, Franklin, you know, that cool little health food store and the pig bar or whatever it is and
Lucky
all that.
Bell restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. I love that place. I mean, that's a funny place to live, though, because it's sort of you're on blast. I mean, that's kind of like Main Street America in a way. I mean, why are you guys choosing to live there? Is it fun to live there? I mean, I guess in the article it said you expect to get pushback or something, but really people are friendly.
Well, we used to live there for 2 years. Now we moved to Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. But back at the time, we really loved the artistic, you know, environment of Beachwood Drive. This little bit for me coming from abroad, living underneath the Hollywood sign while actually doing a little bit of acting career. That was kind of the dream come true, right? It was inspiring to wake up and see this beautiful street and, you know, walk through that. But, you know, it was also a sensitive moment. This place was actually not chosen directly by us at the time. We were already working. We were chosen by a producer in Hollywood who decided to tell our story. And they prepared the setting. So they said, you don't know anything about LA, guys. You're moving here. We're going to film these episodes that are actually in post-production right now. And we suggest you to live here. It's like, it's good for a young couple. You're going to enjoy LA, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, you know, it was a kind of cultural shock for some reason. I remember that while walking through this Beachwood Drive, I would, at the time, I was pretty often from Fox News, MSNBC, and I would have crazy people telling me, you Russian spy, go back to Putin. And I was like, no, I'm Italian. And no matter how many times, once I even exhibited, I had my passport in my hand, I had this reflection to prove myself that I now I lost, and I just laugh, you know. But it was crazy. But now, for example, we have a lot of support, you know, after so many years of debunk the lies, mostly in Beverly Hills, which is, you know, a very conservative environment. So George is recognized at every corner and they just cheer for him. They just, you know, want him to even get involved in politics to save California. So it's a kind of, you know, politics shouldn't be a divider to me. I mean, I'm not that polarized. I have my own opinion. I'm pretty vocal about them. Of course, I'm a conservative. But I think I can deal having a conversation with people who think different from me. But I realized in America, it's people get really much divided.
I don't understand it. I have no idea why people get emotional over who likes who politically. It doesn't make any difference to me what somebody like. I might think somebody's wrong. I might think they're an idiot, whatever, but I won't hate them or get angry. I mean, that's interesting. I brought up Tom Arnold. He's featured in that article as well, and that you guys are unlikely friends. I guess he's like actually a really good friend, and he has Trump derangement syndrome, and you guys clearly don't. I mean, that's how my life is too. I'm friends with people with Trump derangement syndrome, and I don't have Trump derangement syndrome or Trump salvation syndrome either. I don't, you know, to me, he's just a politician. There's some ropey things about him, and there's some things about him I like, and that's it. It's nothing more than that. But I mean, talk to me about developing this friendship with Tom Arnold, and yeah, how it's okay to have friends on opposite sides of the aisle.
Well, back on time when we came to Los Angeles, we are talking now about 2019, so a few years ago, we immediately got drawn into this filming industry together with this docuseries that, as I said, is still in post-production right now. And Tom Arnold was part of this docuseries, so was actually the one and that, as you said, that despite the Trump derangement syndrome, don't forget he was married to Roseanne as well, so
it's that's true,
open to disagreement as well. So despite this, it's all in us, just two interesting people, two people we actually started to relate to on different aspect than politics, and that was probably the, but of course our differences in politics since all have always been wild. I mean, we never not even at one point we agreed politically, but we could still share a story, share these cameras for our show. It was part of our show because it was a paradox, of course, of coming to Hollywood and having friends that belong to a different political world, and not only a different political world, but we're actively working victim of this derangement syndrome. So we're actually, along the time, I even converted some liberals into conservative, joking. I mean, not talking about conversion, but you can change your mind. We have been always pretty conservative since the beginning, but I would like to guess if now, after all the coming out about this Russia hoax, Tom Arnold is still talking about the P-tapes. I don't think so, but it would be interesting to guess.
Well, the P-tapes, I don't know.
That everything was a lie. I think it was
might have been true. That part could have been true. No. So you're a lawyer, you're an investigative journalist. I want to talk about the documentary work you're doing with Oliver Stone as well, but also you're an actress or an actor, and you have your own fashion line. I mean, do you think this time is defined by a lot of us, like, scattered a little bit in terms of what we like? So like, I'm an artist as well, and now I'm doing talk radio on TNT. It's like a sign of the times, I guess, because a lot of us have been sort of pushed into the media or into political positions due to the fact that there's been this real tyrannical grasp at our freedoms. I mean, is that how you fell into all this?
Well, I absolutely, it's a very good way to put it. I personally believe that when you are a creative person, there is not enough ways in which you can express your creativity, starting from your talent, if you have any, because I don't have any talent for singing, so that's something I will never do, but acting and designing and creating, all about expressing yourself. Now, the fact that my background is in law and used to work as an advisor to European Parliament, so in the diplomatic world, is to me something that doesn't limit my possibility to express myself in the artistic fields. It's definitely something that helps me having a certain type of career, and even helped me in my current work as an investigative journalist. And this is another call. Like, this call about investigative journalists came when I became myself the fake news, and I realized that there is a funny aspect to be called a Russian spy, but there is also a less funny aspect when you can't trust your institutions and you can't rely on your federal agencies, that they're not there working to prosecute crimes, but they're working to target people associated to inconvenient voices. In this case, it's Donald Trump, which, of course, I supported and I support, and I wish he'll become president again in 2024. So I've been myself the fake news. So I said, wait a minute, if this happened to me, it can happen to everybody. So let's get back to what is my expertise, which is legal, so investigation. So let's make of it an investigative pattern to give people a documentary to watch and learn how these agencies work. And I was really humbled to be chosen by Igor Lopatonok, who works with Oliver Stone on this series of documentaries on Ukraine. And I took part to the last one in the saga of Ukraine Fire, Revealing Ukraine, and this Ukraine 30 Years. And now I'm currently working with Igor Lopatonok in a new documentary we're filming right now. So it will be interesting because it's all about, you know, outing all the odds of corruption and portraying realities that are different from who they are. But coming back to my artistic pattern, I do still acting, I do still design, and I do still believe that, you know, being an artist is an attitude toward life, and as many ways you can express yourself, and if you have the talent to do that, good to do. I don't need to put myself in a box. I mean, maybe I can sign the legal ethic, but it's who I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it seems like, I guess we live in this new creator economy, though, where we have to sort of find new ways of making a living as, like, old jobs are being taken over by AI. And so, you know, we're becoming brands ourselves. I mean, are you afraid of AI? Do you use AI in your designs or anything like that?
I don't use it yet, but definitely it can be a great asset. Am I afraid? Yes, because you were talking about this world where you create a brand of yourself and growing on Instagram, and I know what the influencer market is. And I see now that there are AI-generated influencers that have an algorithm to target the interest of the audience from a target, age target, mm-hmm. or, you know, market, and they are doing so well that I don't think any human brain can compete with them. So, and they detect the trends, fashion trends, detect what people like. It's an algorithm. It's just like a scary. It's scary because it's, I think AI has the potential to dominate humanity. Because it's like putting, processing, the time of processing of our brains will never be as fast as they are. And we don't have, you know, the metrics when they download all the information. And we're not at this level yet. But it could be an asset. It could be an asset if you know how to use it. But yeah. I'm afraid this can dominate us. But definitely we have a completely new economy. Now people, I was talking to friends where they're asked, how many followers they have on social media rather than how many degrees, you know, like social media following became one parameter in hiring different job positions. So definitely a lot of people investing into making a brand of themselves. Like literally you are the brand, you are the inspiration, you create the fashion. And before it was only the rock stars, you know, they were creating this trend. Mm-hmm. Now people from nowhere start YouTube channel, Instagram accounts, and that's, you know, they can become who they are, what they want, who they are, and having a platform without anybody selecting them.
And AI doesn't have self-esteem issues. When you're trying to build a brand, you have to make videos, you have to make content. So you get on your game and you're doing good one day, and then the next day you're having a low self-esteem day. Maybe you have a zit. The AI never has a zit. So they can definitely beat us. But it's interesting because Elon Musk keeps saying that AI is going to be way smarter than humanity, or it already is, and it's going to be smarter than all humans put together. But do you think that's true? Do you think having endless knowledge is better than having endless imagination? Because a human being who's tapped in and has a connection with God has the imagination to pull from. And sure, they have a limited amount of knowledge, but AI has all the knowledge, all the information, but no imagination. Which is smarter?
I agree with you. I think imagination is the soul that AI will never provide. I mean, mostly when it comes to arts, you can have a program that generates so many, you know, format, painting or soundtrack, but there is no soul and no imagination behind it. So Probably, you know, what makes the magic is the human touch that will be irreplaceable. Talking only about an IQ point of view, yes, Elon Musk maybe is right. AI can be much smarter than all of us because we are becoming also dumb and dumber all the time. You know, like society is getting a little bit of a level of idiocracy sometimes, I see. You know, they feed this.
We are becoming dumber, aren't we? Yeah,
we're becoming, our attention span. People buy into everything, you know, that then I believe that their critical thinking is being taken away. But no, imagination is important. Imagination, the soul, and the emotions. As you just pointed, like, they don't have problem with soul. They don't have the struggle. What is humanity about? It's struggling. It's overcoming. It's producing, creating. So definitely this is a cold robotic society in which services can be replaced, but I don't think the human soul can ever be replaced.
There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in, so says Leonard Cohen. And humanity, we got the cracks. AI, you don't have the cracks. Anyway, let me take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone. Pretty much, that's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other, and we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
The Irish government is proposing a law known as the Hate Speech Bill that threatens free speech. This law could have dire consequences for our democracy.
Next month, and then on to the next week.
This law will have uncertain effects on artistic and musical expression. Please support us. It could stifle the activity of public campaigning on political and civil issues, and also curtail speech relating to topics about religion, ethnicity, sex, and gender.
You could even be jailed for possessing documents, cartoons, or memes on your devices, even if you never read them or intended on sharing them. Mere possession could make you a criminal under this law. Help stop this law. Visit www.freespeechireland.ie/take action to bin the hate speech bill.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Simona Papadopoulos. That's a hard name to say, Papadopoulos.
You pronounced it perfectly.
Oh, good. And so you also lived in Brussels, right? And you were, what were you doing? Child protection policies in Brussels. I love Brussels. Mm. I used to play at this place called the Botanique. Did you ever go to the Botanique?
I missed it. Mm. Botanique, of course, I played the rotund many times. Sorry, I just didn't catch the beautiful.
Botanique.
Very interesting city.
It is cool, isn't it? How long? And you lived in New York and Beechwood Canyon. I lived in New York for 25 years, so you've lived in some really cool places. What's your favorite place you ever lived?
Well, my favorite is LA at the moment.
Really?
But it's a combination of everything. I tell you what, I like the European, old Europe vibes of Brussels. I like the energy of New York, and I like the laid-back artistic vibe of LA. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little, I think I couldn't live in one place for how, you know, I am. I like that I had the chance experience to live in different places and take this energy out of them. But definitely, I think mostly for an artist, Brussels is very interesting scene for all the concerts at the Botanique. I don't know, maybe I've seen you there, I don't know, but where many us also now, Deco and Magritte and all the, you know, all this epoch of painters. And at the same time, with the merger with diplomacy, I was a legal advisor of the European Parliament. I was working on child protection at the time. But it was also very interesting cultural life, very interesting cultural life that probably missed a little bit in Los Angeles. But it's all for this time of my life with my husband. We are very happy in Beverly Hills. And we also travel a lot still for working, both of us. So it's not like we're stuck in one place.
And how did you get into working with child protection services? Real quick, I wanted to ask you about your husband, but I want to find out what got you into child protection services specifically, because also it just seems like there's a correlation with investigative journalists who are women who end up doing stuff with child protective services for some reason. Am I making that up?
No, actually, I think it's most of women have this sensitiveness toward this topic when it comes to child trafficking and human trafficking and child abduction. At the time, I was working for the presidency office, and I could choose. Actually, they gave me the opportunity to choose which of the policies I wanted to focus on. And I had, for example, criminal justice in the European Union or juridic committee. And there was also an option to fight for child abduction, against child abduction, trying to recover these kids and follow the diplomatic patterns to judicial cooperation between states where the child were abducted to take the child back. And I thought this was definitely something I was interested to do too. And it was actually amazing because every and each time, and I did recover a child from a case of abduction, it was an incredible achievement. You know, I felt
amazing.
It was meaningful work. So this is something I really enjoyed doing. And I had the chance to choose.
Listen, I have a little daughter, and I couldn't imagine. It's just like obviously that's every parent's deepest fear. Do you think this is what led you into the work you're doing now? I mean, obviously, meeting George and, you know, getting targeted by the deep state. Do you view, like, were you alerted to sort of a thread of evil operating through our world and feeling like you wanted to address it and attack it head on? Or did you get attacked by evil? Do you even view it as evil, or do you just view it as political corruption?
Well, I view this political corruption as evil, absolutely, because they really walk on people lives, and I'm talking about citizen lives. They go against their values, so they lie, they deceit. So to me, it's all evil, and as child abduction is evil. Like, to reach this level of corruption, you must be evil. That's why I really believe there's a spiritual battle behind this call. And my background definitely helped me understanding and framing what was happening to George first and what happened to me as well later. So I had the mean to understand what was going on. And then once we assessed what we were going on, and now it's the time to fight back. How do you fight back? Putting your expertise and your investigation at service of people and trying to out as much corruption as you want. And I do see it as a fight against evil. Because I think when they lie about people, when they frame people, when they accuse people or set up people for crime they didn't commit just to push a political agenda, this has no political color. This can happen to everybody on the right, on the left side. So everybody should be concerned by their institution working to a political end rather than for the people. And I'm not being idealistic talking about this. I think that's how we should expect our institution to work. And it's for us and not for anybody else. And when they get to the extent to assassinate people's characters, that's a form of murder for me. So, yes, definitely there is a line from my past experience and this one that is the same, motivated by the same call.
And you and George going through what you went through, I mean, I've been through smear campaigns too, and had my life turned inside out through speaking up and doing stuff like that. And it's interesting because it takes a toll. It takes a toll on a lot of relationships. It doesn't just hurt the person it's happening to. It hurts the people in their life as well. And it's hard to find people, even good people won't necessarily stick with somebody going through that. I mean, I won't just blame somebody who walks away from somebody enduring a heavy duty smear campaign. What was the secret to keeping your marriage together in that sort of gauntlet of pressure and stress? And, you know, also a lot of women would leave that situation, I would think. So it's kind of amazing that you didn't, I think. What's the secret to what gave you the strength to stick together?
For me, I love my husband. When I love my husband from the day one, was an unconditional bond. So there is no way I could walk away because of his troubles, because it's not me. It's just like simply it's not part of the definition of how I live love and commitment and loyalty. So I think everybody goes through many challenges, and there is a reason why some couple breaks and some couple survives is because it's the authenticity of this bond. So yes, in the beginning George was the target, and it didn't even cross my mind. Of course, we had a good roller coaster, difficult times, better times. Everybody would experience the same. But you have, you know, always an option under pressure. You can break or you can make a diamond. So that's what I saw my relationship with. This was the way I saw my relationship. And there's no absolutely way I would give up on somebody because it's going through something bad.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really, really cool. I mean, so when you say you think what we're going through is a spiritual battle, has the recent years pushed you more towards a relationship with God? Did you always have a relationship with God, or is that deepened?
I've always been very spiritual and a Christian in my life, but these last years of my life, I really could experience the power of God. I mean, the worst, I was like the most evil attacked me, the most I felt close to God, because God never let me down. And I'm telling you, this is a fact, it's not a feeling. In every single time I was on the point to break or succumb, but God would send me something to relieve and just like have a new chance and new channel, new opportunities. So I think when you have faith, first of all, you don't doubt, you don't fear, and you can stand strong through adversity. And there is only one reason why we could hold on as individuals and as a couple, because of the faith in God. And I mean it. I mean, like, it's not a slogan. I truly could tell 1,000 episodes in which this God showed up in my life, in our life, simply based on this faith.
And do you have like a practice of sort of checking in with God every day, seeking the Father first and everything? I mean, how sort of devout or robust is your spiritual practice? And do you guys do it together as a couple?
Yeah, we actually, we do a lot of meditation together. We listen to Orthodox chants, which is a very powerful vehicle to communication with God. These Orthodox chants are very, I don't understand the language, of course, they're usually in Orthodox Greek or can be Russian or whatever, like a language, it's like Latin, you know, and it's not about Orthodoxy or Catholicism, it's about this vibration that gives you the connection to God, and it's a state of deep meditation in which you feel deeply connected. We both do that, often together.
That's awesome. Yeah, I find lately that it's just about finding presence every day and finding silence, and that sort of presence is God operates through us and sort of heals us and imbues us with strength and faith, you know?
Yes. And, you know, the most you are religious, the most more religious, the most you to me, being religious means living by certain principles, doesn't mean to self-affirm your values, it means implementing these values in your life. And the most you are in the pattern of God, sometimes the better you are, the most evil is thrown at you. So that's something I noticed, that the best you are, the most evil experience you must face. It's a test sometimes, but it's also something to show you that if there is something that evil is scared by, it's light, it's godly people. So this is another aspect that also experienced in the last years, fighting a lot of evil.
It's so true. We do not live in a neutral world at all. And there, our battle is with principalities, not with flesh and blood. And they seem to be paying attention. That's for sure. So you're doing a lot of investigative journalism. There's like some kind of new Hunter Biden situation, new evidence of Hunter Biden corruption. I don't know if you have anything that you want to break here or talk about here regarding that, but what kind of work are you doing in terms of investigative journalism lately?
Well, you know, back in 2016, when we started this Russia hoax investigation, was all about talking about the electoral interference of Russia trying to collude with Donald Trump to help him win the election. This was a complete lie, and this fake investigation got me involved. So now I started to investigate lately about the real election interference. And the most my investigation went by, the most one name were coming out of this investigation was Joe Biden. The only country involved with the intellectual interference was Ukraine. So besides this revelation that people already knew about Hunter Biden and Burisma affairs, you know, the company where Hunter Biden, the Ukrainian company where Hunter Biden was sitting in the board, the administrator for $80,000 a month, I had a chance to interview lately a speaker, a character that was hiding from the public for the last 2 years because it was sanctioned by the United States for collaborating with Rudy Giuliani into an intergovernmental investigation about corruption. And in particular, the Biden's family corruption in Ukraine. So when I sit with them in Minsk on December 2023, so a few months ago, he provided with new evidence of corruption and actually revealed to me that his life is at risk for exposing corruption. He has been victim of assassination attempt along with other people trying to out Biden corruption in Ukraine. So to me, this is part of my current work. Actually, the most sensational outing of these interviews that some people's life is at risk for doing their job. And so we come from a corrupt government to a criminal government. That's the things that was really disturbing, and it's really shocking. And
it's not that shocking, though, is it really? I mean, I mean, it might be a mic drop to some degree, but it's not surprising to me to hear that. I mean, what I am shocked about is like the sort of Hunter Biden laptop thing, how like years later, it's sort of okay to notice it and to think, something's going on there. It seems like there's just like such a lag of when the information comes out and people actually respond and take it seriously. Because I remember Bobulinski going on Tucker Carlson while the election was still taking place and relaying his whole story about Hunter Biden and his dealings with him and 10% for the big guy. And Bobulinski seemed totally legit. And you could just sort of trust him. Like, you know what I mean? He came off like he had integrity. He came off credible, I guess is the word. And the fact that it just got brushed under the rug until like 3 or 4 years later and people are like, hey, you know what? This laptop thing, there's something to this and there's something to corruption here. You know what I mean? Why does it take so long?
Well, it takes so long. I don't know if it takes so long or because they never wanted at all to look into that. I mean, it's something that I always point out. Like there is a Hunter Biden laptop, which is full of incriminating information, full of incriminating picture and emails and every other evidence of corruption of any kind. But what happened, and actually it's part of my current job, that's why I'm very interested, you were actually working right now on Hunter laptop. It's why we are ignoring it, because it's a deflective strategy to deny everything this laptop represents, saying that somehow is phony, is a Russian propaganda. Or I heard Hunter Biden saying in his testimony on the at the House of Judiciary Committee on February 28, he said that the all this misinformation was production of the MAGA conspiracy theorists. So this is actually the most disturbing thing about. I agree with you. It's actually the most disturbing of them all. I mean, this is probably the most shocking things that we would even feel comfortable using such a a stupid, idiotic excuse to deflect responsibility from something that it's an incontrovertible piece of evidence. And,
until
the court will hold these people accountable, the people will feel they can do whatever they want. And imagine if anybody in the Trump circle would be found with a similar laptop. They would be in the hand of it, you know.
It would be insane.
Yeah, they're trying to make up crimes and they hide their crimes, and it's so evident right now to everybody that I believe their, you know, their days of impunity will be soon over. I hope.
Let's hope so. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe. From power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Internet crimes against children in New Mexico are real. And when it comes to protecting your children, the New Mexico AG's office and the ICAC unit are on the front lines. I'm New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas. There's nowhere to hide for online predators in New Mexico. We are working tirelessly using state-of-the-art technology and resources to seek out and find them wherever they are. Please talk to your children about the dangers that exist online. Social media, games, and messenger apps. It's always important to know who you're talking to.
Help fight online predators in New Mexico by submitting a tip today.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Simona Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos. You definitely. Papadopoulos.
Well, bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum. Papadopoulos, bum, bum. Simona Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos. I teach my daughter this kind of stuff. I'm trying to teach her like rhythms and vocal structures. I sneak music teaching with singing, and I'm teaching her rhythms. So I'm super keen on the rhythm thing.
I'm gonna sing this at home now.
So let me ask you this though, because. You know, I know you're for Trump. It's interesting. And like I said, I don't have Trump derangement syndrome or Trump salvation syndrome. And the MAGA thing is getting pretty crazy too, just like with the sort of cult of personality around that. You know, the Trump salvation syndrome and, you know, all that. But does it disturb you that he still is talking about like the mRNA injection as a good idea and a success and all this stuff? It seems so odd that there's no candidate that to me fully is like just nailing every single thing. And Trump's big Achilles heel, in my view, and Alex Jones certainly talks about it a lot and other people do. Tim Pool got mad that people are talking about it a lot. Anomaly, the YouTuber, talks about it a lot. But the fact that he keeps acting like the mRNA injection was a good idea, and he's not sort of acknowledging the horrendous devastation that that thing has had for many, many people. And we've never seen so many untimely deaths. And it seems like obviously there's a correlation, just sort of like the obviousness of the Hunter Biden laptop and 10% for the big guy. I could say the same thing about mRNA and people dropping dead like flies like we've never seen before. But I mean, does that part bug you about Trump, or do you don't care?
Well, I actually don't really. I think mRNA, all this technology around vaccine, are something that belongs to scientific field, and I don't blame Donald Trump or anyone who thought at some point that could be the response to a deadly virus. Actually, it's an experimental procedure, and I don't think my opinion is based on if he supports that or is against that. I personally believe that vaccine has been terrible. I had to do it and I regret it. So I am one of the people that at some point was convinced that, could be an option. Actually, I did it in very strange circumstances. But coming back to what you said, it's...
What circumstances did you do it?
Well, my dad was severely ill, cancer, and I couldn't even see him if he didn't get the vaccine. So to me, it was not even like a job issue. So it was really, and then of course I started to read about the RNA. RNA is something that potentially in the future could be a technique used to defeat cancer. We don't know. I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. You know.
I want to say this though, real quick, because I'm not saying like initially that I blame him for his take on it. Initially, I get it. Or do I blame anybody who took it initially, because it was such a crazy campaign and so much societal pressure, and like you said, even in your situation, which is extreme. You know, your father's ailing and you want to see him and you can't. I mean, that's like a horrendous situation to be in. So, of course, no one with any kind of right mind would blame you for getting it, or even the way Trump rolled it out because of the panic of the moment. What I'm saying is, even as lately as a week ago, he's still talking about it like it's a great thing. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, like, dude, like, you know, it's like, I get it back then, but now it's just kind of weird.
Well, overall, the reason why I support Trump and I really hope he'll become president again is for many reasons, many, many reasons. And of course, about the vaccine, I don't have enough information why he still believes that it could be a good remedy, but you know, many people have different opinions. But I think today America needs a fighter, needs somebody who loves their country, will be somebody who boosts the economy, who have somebody who doesn't lie to their people, who is gonna drain the swamp. And then when you say there is a syndrome, which is the Trump derangement syndrome, I believe that that's this syndrome that led to make of Trump the victim to save, you know, like it's not like a Trump salvation syndrome. It's like they went after one man so bad that they made of him a martyr. And it's how many people you know that have been indicted so many times for so many ridiculous reasons that have been proved to be false, so one in each time. Somebody who was in power and they couldn't even focus. I mean, actually did great, but imagine if you could focus on just governing the country instead than defending himself every single time from false accusation along all his presidency, and then keeping trying to delegitimize Iran. And you know, about the last part about vaccine, as I said, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know why, but whatever is promoting, one thing I know about Donald Trump is based on his genuine conviction, and it's not based on an agenda as the one promoted by Joe Biden and all the corrupted government. So Of course, you can agree or disagree with certain things from even the people you support. But one trait about Trump is that he's genuine and is a fighter for his country. So I know whatever he's promoting is based on his authentic conviction.
And so how did George end up working for him? That's kind of an interesting story, right? He was like sort of a political hustler in a way. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but like when I read a little of the story, it was like he was hustling. He was like going out and, you know, a young man trying to find a position of power in a way, right?
Well, George, it's a little bit the way they portrayed him, but George was actually a consultant at the Hudson Institute and was already working for one presidential campaign before Trump. It was Ben Carson. So he had an extensive, besides his young age, an extensive, solid experience also in the oil and energy business. That's why he became a foreigner. He had no connection whatsoever. It's not like the son of somebody connected to Trump.
Right.
He didn't hustle his way, you know, as a typical hustler. He did by his
yeah, I didn't. Hustle, hustle is the wrong. Hustle is the wrong word because hustle is kind of negative sounding, and yeah, I don't mean it. I don't mean it negative.
Level and very young age, and this is also his honor. And that made of him somebody agencies were scared about. That's the reason why he became the first target, not because he was a random person, but because it was somebody who was acquiring influence from a very young age. And you see his resilience. This experience would have destroyed everybody. But, you know, he actually came up stronger than ever because he had solid experience behind him, supporting him. It was not like by accident there. That's why he could recover and actually in the process of recovering, he exposed everything they were doing.
That's incredible. That's really awesome. I mean, how did you guys meet? Tell me that story.
Well, we worked for the same company in London in different times, and he reached out to me via LinkedIn. So we started to talk, and then I was going to New York, and on occasion of this trip to New York, we met. That's the first time, and then everything started. It was immediate, we went to holiday together in Europe, and then the rest is history, what happened right after that. So we actually have the connection was the same workplace and LinkedIn, not Tinder, LinkedIn.
So you guys met in New York City?
Yes, it was the first time
we met. Where did you go on your first date?
Pow.
Where?
Pow.
Pow?
Tao.
The boxing place?
No, Tao.
Oh, Tao. Is it a Tao? I thought you said Pow.
No. I mean, my accent didn't improve yet. But Tao is a beautiful sushi.
Nice.
Anyway, Tao. This was our first date.
That's awesome. And where were you flying in from? Were you living in Italy then or Brussels?
No, I was living in London.
Oh, in London. What part of London?
I was in Westminster area.
I used to live in Streatham Common.
Mm-hmm. So that was really like, an interesting international story, a love story. And actually, the interesting part of it is that the company, London Center of International Law Practice, where I used to work for when I met George and where he worked before, was the company where this infamous professor, Joseph Mifsud, was director. So basically, I was dragged into the investigation, not simply because I was dating George, but because I was witness in the investigation because of Joseph Mifsud.
Mm-hmm. And he's the link. He was the main link that they said was the sort of Russian disinformation funnel, right?
Well, it was actually a Maltese professor that was speaking perfectly Italian. It was I met him for the first time at the European Parliament. He was actually very active in the socialist circles. He was advocating for Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016. He was actually supporting a lot of Democrats in Europe and in Italy. He was actually very close to the then president of the socialist group of the European Union. And that's how I knew him. That's how I knew his connection. So I actually testified under oath about his connection multiple times. And they lead to Western intelligence ties, definitely not any tie with Russia. So the fact that ever since Smith disappeared and I became myself an inconvenient voice is that they wanted to discredit in many ways. Why they wanted to discredit me so bad? Because I testified about this person. And in certain way, I made collapse their entire narrative, which was that George was Trump campaign was colluding with Russian spies, which is absolutely not true. So instead then spreading the real news, which was that the Joseph Mifsud was actually a socialist campaigning for Hillary Clinton, they had to make up that my accent and my look are Russian, so I am the Russian spy. So that's how crazy they are.
Well, I can't wait to see the movie. You do fit the part. They nailed it on that level, but they got, I guess they just, everything but the truth, you know? They got it, everything but the truth, right.
And they're really creative too, right?
Yeah, they are. Turns out they're pretty creative. Listen, Simona, thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell everybody where to find you.
So I'm on Simona Mangiante, and Instagram Simona_Mangiante.
All right, Simona, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you. It was amazing talking to you. Thank you so much, and have a great
Have a great night. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be back with more on TNT.